Blog Talk Radio.
From Washington, D.C., this is Student Loan Justice Radio. I'm your host, Alan Collins. Welcome. It is a fairly cool Monday morning, July 13th, here in the nation's capital. Let me tell you a little bit about studentloanjustice.org. We were started about 10 years ago as a result of my own personal issues with student loans. And what began as a concern became a full-on research project. And over the past 10 years, we've been featured top story on 60 Minutes. We've written pieces in the New York Times. We've been interviewed by every newspaper in the country, nearly. We've done tons of radio shows. We've been featured on CNBC. Most importantly, our research has been used as the focus of multiple Senate investigations and also a couple of state attorneys general investigations, most notably Elliot Spitzer at the state of New York. So we are here to promote the return of standard consumer protections to student loans. Student loans are uniquely vacated of nearly every standard consumer protection that citizens take for granted with every other type of loan in this country. So in other words, bankruptcy protections, statutes of limitations, truth in lending laws, fair debt collection practices, even state usury laws have been exempted uniquely for student loans. And now we are seeing the result. Folks, we've been fighting this fight for 10 years now. And I can tell you that it's going to take the citizens to make Congress undo what Congress did. Because let's be clear, this problem started back in the 1970s with Congress removing bankruptcy protections initially. And by 2005, not only had all the consumer protections I mentioned previously been removed from federal student loans, in 2005, our Congress, most notably John Boehner, Buck McEwen, and others, took bankruptcy protections away from private student loans. And this is killing not thousands, not tens of thousands, not hundreds of thousands, not even millions, but tens of millions of our citizens. Today, our country is strapped with over $1.4 trillion in student loan debt. Now, when we started this project with studentloanjustice.org, the nation owed maybe $350 billion student loan debt. Well, here we are 10 years later, and that figure has nearly quadrupled. So I would like also to mention that we are completely citizen-supported. We make no deals with the collection industry. We make no revenue through advertising. We are supported solely by your donations. So before we start the show, I'd just like to put in a quick plug and implore all of you to go to studentloanjustice.org and see how you can help, whether by donation, whether by your actions, whether by joining our Facebook group, joining your state chapter. There's a ton of things that you can do, and I would implore you all to think about that very carefully, studentloanjustice.org. Okay, so getting along with our show, we have with us today Mrs. Laura Pasco from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And I'll let Laura tell a little bit more of her story in a minute, but first, I'd just like to talk about something called the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program. This is a program that the federal government has implemented as sort of a substitute for bankruptcy protections. And the advertisement is that if you work in an underserved community, if you work for a nonprofit, for a hospital, for a school, then after 10 years of making payments according to your income, the remaining debt would be forgiven. Well, that sounds great, and the Obama administration has made great hay with this program, in addition to what's called the income-based repayment program, which is similar, but it forgives the remainder of the debt after 20 years. These programs sound really great, folks, but here is the cold, hard truth. The Department of Education was started with the mantra of making government run like a business. And indeed, executives from Sallie Mae started, designed, and now currently run the Office of Financial Aid for the Department of Education. So this public service loan forgiveness program and the income-based repayment program are essentially being run like credit card teasers. You know, the credit card deals where they say, you know, we'll give you a break on your interest if you make on-time payments for a year, that sort of thing. Well, it turns out that these credit card teasers, only about 15% of the people that try and get these benefits actually get them. In other words, 85% get kicked out at some point during the repayment period for one reason or another, a late payment, a misposted payment, who knows. Well, similarly, the Department of Education is trying to kick as many people out of these programs as possible so that they don't have to cancel the debt at the end of the term. And so I'd like to talk about that today. And here with us is Laura Pasco from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Laura, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, great. It worked this time. We've had some technical snafus. And let me, just as an aside, this is our second podcast, folks, so we're still sort of in the rough stages, so bear with us. Well, Laura, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, could you tell us a little bit about your situation?
Absolutely. I started receiving student loans in spring of 1997, and I was going back from my post-bac for my teaching degree. And I was under the premise that if I taught for 5 years in an urban area or Title I school after I began teaching, that my student loans would be forgiven. So I embarked on my teaching career in 1998, and by 2003, I was almost complete with my second master's degree, and I was in the middle of pursuing my doctorate at the time. I had my student loans deferred, but I was looking to make payments and to let them know to enroll in the plan that, hey, I'm working at a Title I school. So when I submitted my letter and my application, they denied it, and they said that my student loans were taken out after October 1st, 1998, and that it did not apply to me and my student loans would not be forgiven. So at that time, my student loans were only $129,000. So then I sent them numerous letters, but I had moved across country within that time, so my paperwork was gone. So I had nothing to prove, that nothing ever said that when I took out these student loans. So a couple of years later, I heard about the public school forgiveness loan. So I began that. Public service loan. I began that, and then I ended up working at a children's medical center. During the interim, I started making payments. I was still on the service program, and then I began teaching again, remaining on the service program. Every year you have to submit proof that's where you're working, which I did.
Right.
And
that's a very important point. If I could just jump in here just for a minute. People don't realize that you have to reapply every year to remain in these public service loan forgiveness programs. That's a very important point. Go ahead.
So now I'm probably paying into it at this point about 4 years. And obviously, because I was a teacher, in Philadelphia, we don't make a lot of money. I was working in a charter school, again, Title I school. I would always supplement my income on the side as an independent contractor, writing articles, whatever I could do, training athletes. And
right.
That year when I was applying, they said, we're sorry, but I made over like $78,000 that year. I made maybe $79,000 or $80,000. And they had said, oh, I'm sorry, you made too much money. And I go, that has nothing to do with the forgiveness loan. The loan is the fact that if you work in such an area, it never stipulated anything that had to do with my salary. So I...
Now, if I could just interrupt you with a question, Laura.
Sure.
Did your balance increase during the time while you were on in the public service program? I mean, I assume that maybe it probably did.
Oh, absolutely. When I started the program, I was at $129,000, and when I started the program, I was at one 180 and it was climbing.
Right.
The interest is inflated. My loan was sold at least 4 times. I can't prove any of my payments. They say that I didn't make as many payments as I said. I can't prove it anymore because it's bounced around for so many different loan operators or loan companies. So I was forced basically after they dropped me to leave teaching within those 6 months I left teaching because there's no way I could afford. It was at that time like $780 a month. And with my teaching salary, with a single mother with 2 children, it was just not going to happen. So I left the job, and I took the full-time. I work as a sport and recreation forensic expert, and I was an independent contractor for a firm for about 5 years, and they took me on full-time. And with that, obviously, you make more money. And with that, then now my student loans are about $982 a month. They go up every 2 years. I am now at $225,000 in student loan debt, and I am told at the end of the 30 years, because they're not even applying anything I've paid, because they state it's all gone to interest, so I can't prove any payment.
You're still paying the interest, right.
And I will be, when I'm done, when it's all said and done in 30 years, 28 years now, whatever it is, it's going to be $338,000, and my original loan was $129,000. Now, I don't have a problem paying back the money that I have borrowed, but the fact that they would inflate the interest and do whatever they could to almost triple what I paid for my education is absolutely ridiculous, and it's very unfair.
You know, Laura, I empathize with your plight, and I can tell you that your story is not at all unique. And to the people listening out there, I hope you've heard the numbers that have been thrown around here. If this is the same sort of ratios that are happening to you, just know that you all are not alone. You know, this is what happens when you remove the most fundamental consumer protections from a loan, whether it's federally guaranteed or not. And in this case, the government has a hand in it, but that doesn't matter. This is what happens when you remove bankruptcy protections, statutes of limitations, truth in lending laws, fair debt collection practices. The borrowers are essentially treated like piñatas. In other words, the lenders make more money, essentially, by confusing the borrower, by baffling the borrower. So, you know, you mispost a payment, whoops, oh, you make more money. You give the borrower bad information about their loan, you make more money. This is exactly why the founding fathers of this country demanded that among Congress's responsibilities at the near the top of the list was the creation of a uniform bankruptcy code. It is only when borrowers have the power of bankruptcy in their back pocket, and again, nobody wants to file for bankruptcy. And in general, everybody that takes out a loan does so in good faith. And, you know, Laura, you're quick to point out that you're more than willing to pay back, you know, your loan, but the increase on the loan is what you have the problem with. Well, that increase is exactly what happens when the lenders don't have to worry about bankruptcy, don't have to worry about statute of limitations. They essentially have an ATM machine at their disposal. It's a printing press for cash. And
May I interrupt?
Please.
They won't allow, even when I try to bargain to have a lower payment, they won't even budge. Even credit cards will budge. You know, they wouldn't even budge. Then I was told that I should never have been dropped from the public service loan agreement, and that there's nothing they can do now because obviously I didn't make my, you know, 10 years consecutive 120 payments. Although I made 4.5 or 5.5 years, I believe. I lost a year somewhere where I can't prove. And they say that even though I was consecutive, they're the ones who made the mistake. They're the ones who dropped me, and they won't, they wouldn't place me back on it. You know, so I can't
teaching. This is exactly what I predicted would happen before they even started the Public Service Forgiveness Program, because I've been studying the Department of Education for many years, and believe me, the Department of Education has no desire nor intention of repaying any of these loans. If they had it their way, they would not forgive $1 through the public service program or through the income-based repayment program. They wouldn't. And so that's why I'm so glad that we had you here today, so that we can demonstrate that this is true. And as I said, you certainly aren't alone, Laura. I mean, there are so many people to whom exactly the same thing is happening. And if it's not your income, it can be any number of reasons that they can kick you out of the program. And so I just implore people to be very careful and very cautious and very wary about these programs. And as I said before, while nobody ever wants to file for bankruptcy, it's a horrible thing to do. It's a horrible thing to have to do. Not having bankruptcy protections, and I would add statute of limitations and the other consumer protections that I just mentioned, this is what happens. The government likes to sell its lending programs as very friendly and so forth, but in fact the opposite is true. And I'm so sorry to hear that this happens not only to you, Laura, but to so many other people. It is just unconscionable.
Yeah.
So,
I feel bad for people, and I feel bad the fact that, you know, people will also kind of bash the people who are looking for some kind of forgiveness. I'm not looking for my loans to be forgiven. I've taken them out. I mean, I've taken them out. I deserve to pay them back. However, not at such an inflated rate. That's the main issue with everything.
That's
what
right.
They're doing to everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you look at certainly the comments below media stories about the student loan program, you see an army of what I suspect are mostly paid consultants who comment anonymously below these articles. You see all the standard knee-jerk reactions. You borrowed the money, you need to pay it back. You're a deadbeat. You shouldn't have gone to such an expensive school. Blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, I think almost everyone with student loans agrees that if you borrow money, you should pay it back. But, you know, this issue of personal responsibility has been held up and used as a cover for grossly inadequate and predatory lending irresponsibility. And this is really why this problem has been perpetuated for so long. You know, the media is a powerful thing. And if people keep pointing the finger at the borrowers rather than where the problem actually lies for the student loan problem, which is on the lending side, we will go nowhere. You know, as I said, 10 years ago, we owed about $350 billion in student loan debt. Today, we owe over $1.4 trillion, and the colleges and universities are increasing their tuitions at way more than double the rate of inflation over the past 30 years or so, and that simply is not stopping. And until bankruptcy protections are restored, I just don't see a solution to this problem. So Laura, what are you doing now? How are you dealing with it?
I'm struggling making my payments. I have no choice. I tried to reduce them. They won't reduce them. I think I'm more nervous in 2 years what they're going to become. They'll be well over $1,000 a month. And I have two young children under the age of 8. So it's I'm very nervous about it. So
my goodness. Well, I hope that people listening to this podcast are listening carefully, and they're seeing that it's not just them, and they're also seeing that these public service loan forgiveness, these programs, public service loan forgiveness and the income-based repayment program, are, quite frankly, wolves in sheep's clothing. These programs are no substitute for the standard consumer protections that should have never been taken away by Congress. Again, I would hope that y'all would come to studentloanjustice.org so that we can band together and coalesce into a strong fighting force. And, you know, some of the other big numbers that I think people may not be aware of. So $1.4 trillion in debt, we all, I think, are aware of that. But, you know, that's spread over 40 million citizens. And I also want to mention there was a study by the Institute for Higher Education Policy that came out in 2010. Now, this study followed 1.8 million people who left school in 2005. And what it found was that 5 years after graduation, 15% of these borrowers had defaulted on their loans, and another roughly 50% could not repay their loans. In other words, they were either delinquent, they were in forbearance, or they were in deferment. So the big picture there is, out of 1.8 million borrowers, which is a very large sample size, 2005 graduates, over 60% could not pay their loans. In fact, only 37% were making on-time payments on their loans. Now, 2005 was a pretty good economy. Remember that back in the day when unemployment was a little north of 5% and the stock market was doing great and everything was hunky-dory and there was no subprime home mortgage crisis? Back in the good old days. Well, the economy clearly has gotten far worse since 2005. So we can only expect that if over 60% of borrowers were unable to pay from that cohort of students today, the problem is far worse. This is huge, folks. You know, the subprime home mortgage default rate, lifetime default rate, the true default rate for subprime home mortgage loans, was about 25%, maybe somewhere between 20 and 25%. Well, by my best estimations, the lifetime default rate for federal student loans is certainly 40%, 40%. And some people, including credit.com, are making projections that the lifetime default rate is at about 50%. So think about that, folks. This is not a borrower problem. This is a lending problem. And Laura, I just want to thank you very much for coming on. Is there anything else you'd like to add? Oh, okay. It looks like Laura's already signed off. Well, I just want to thank Laura for telling her story. It's very important. And folks, if you'd like to tell your story, please come to studentloanjustice.org. Send me an email. I love doing interviews with members who whose stories are demonstrative of the larger problem. And again, you know, there's 40 million people out in the country right now with student loans. Of those, something like 60% or 24 million people are unable to repay their loans. 24 million people, folks, is a political movement. 24 million people can swing a presidential election. 24 million people could completely crash every switchboard in Congress. 24 million people is more than twice the number of illegal immigrants in this country, for example. This is not a small issue, folks. This is a large issue. You all are not alone. There are 24 million people out there, and we are working very hard to bring them all together. This is a very simple problem, folks. It started with the removal of bankruptcy protections and the other consumer protections that I mentioned, but the most important, clearly, is bankruptcy. And just to reiterate, you know, our founding fathers, when they enumerated the powers of Congress, near the top of the list, ahead of forming a navy, ahead of coining currency, was the demand that Congress create a uniform system for bankruptcy across the country. And this is exactly the problem. Congress created it. Congress must solve it. But Congress clearly must be pushed. You know, we've been fighting this battle, as I said, for about 10 years now. Our argument is unassailably strong. Our argument is a sledgehammer. And it grows stronger every day. But the fact is that if you don't make the argument, you won't win the argument. So, and if you don't make the argument where the argument needs to be made, the problem will only perpetuate and be cascaded onto future generations. And believe me, this problem is getting far worse far more quickly today than it was even 5 years ago. But at the same time, our argument is far stronger today than it was, quite frankly, even 1 year ago. It really is up to the citizens, folks. And I'm sorry that you don't want to think about your student loans. I know I'm the same way. In the words of Education Secretary Margaret Spellings from about 10 years ago, the system is Byzantine and broken. I know student loans are not your favorite subject. They are quite baffling and confusing, and that is by design. But the fact is, folks, that this sort of debt slavery is going to be perpetuated, and it will get worse if we continue to do nothing. So we have a job to do, folks. And the politicians in Congress, even the ones you may like, even Bernie Sanders, who recently proposed a free college for everyone, Martin O'Malley, etc., none of the politicians, certainly none of the presidential candidates, have even mentioned bankruptcy and federal student loans in the same sentence. Their plans, like, for example, Bernie Sanders' plan to have the government cover two-thirds of the cost of tuition and have the states cover the remaining third, great plans. I have nothing bad to say about them. However, their plans do absolutely nothing for the 40 million people and their families who are out there in the world struggling under the weight of these inherently predatory, structurally predatory student loans. And this is unfortunately what democracy looks like, folks. This is where it begins. It begins with you. Only you can help. So it looks like we're getting close to the end of our show. I will only implore you all once again to come to studentloanjustice.org. Tell your story for the record. Get educated about this problem. I know that most of you are probably incredibly confused about your student loans. You probably don't even know whether you have public federal loans or private loans, and you don't know the difference, and who's to blame you? I mean, nobody would. It's a Byzantine, broken system. Even according to the Department of Education's secretary 10 years ago, and it's far worse today. Come to studentloanjustice.org. Visit our Facebook page. That's really where the rubber meets the road as far as our activities go. And you can get there at Facebook/groups/SLJ group, Student Loan Justice Group, and join your state chapter. Jump up to the national page and let's knock heads and let's get Congress to feel our pain and to act, not just talk, but act. As things are progressing with the presidential campaign now, if all we have to look forward to are these plans for how to reduce the burden in the future, the 40 million people who are saddled with 1.4, probably 1.5 at this point, trillion dollars in student loan debt will get nothing, and their lives will continue to be hindered greatly by their student loan debt, folks. So again, this is Alan Collins from Washington, D.C. This is Student Loan Justice Radio, and thank you for being a part of our second episode, and we look forward to future podcasts. Hang in there and keep fighting.